especially in the world that we live in today, that radical, abundant grace for one another. So blessings be to the ancients who wrote their wisdom and passed it down to this day. All right. I have learned that when we are going to have a sermon, I used to use white paper, but if you find really bright paper, you don't lose it halfway through, and you don't have to shoot from the hip, as they say. So this morning's message is called The Countercultural Christ. I'm a firm believer that this message of Christ is not owned by one day ideology or the other. It is open to all of us. And we all fall short of the glory of the perfection that is the Holy Trinity. So this morning I met with you first and I shared about the role that your church has had in my journey. I also want to give a shout out quick to Pastor Patty. So she made me the stole and I received an ordination. So I'm so excited to be in this space and hold that with her. That's really meaningful. And typically I don't wear a collar and all this. I think I'm coming back, well, I know, later this year. I hope it's okay. I typically wear Hawaiian shirts. But I thought for my first time around, I will toe the party line and I will put a collar on. But this is my style, so thank you to Pastor Patty for that. Also, Patty, if you didn't know this, she's the chair on the Committee on Ministry for the United Northern Association. So in the UCC, yes, we're independent churches. We all operate independently, but there's 14 of us that I like to call cousin churches. We do our own things, we run our own affairs, but our ministers know each other, and we have meetings a couple times a year. Well, Patty is the chair of the Committee on Ministry. So that's the committee I serve on as well, but had to go for to the blessing to go to the Ecclesiastical Council, and then they did my ordination. We call the Committee on Ministry the COM, the C-O-M. So that makes Patty the chair of the COM, the C-O-M, of the United Northern Association, the UNA, of the Michigan Conference, the MC, of the United Church of Christ, the UCC. So she's the chair of the C-O-M, of the UNA, of the MC, of the UCC. So I work for the government as a nurse Monday through Friday. That is a mouthful for me, even as a governmental employee. But God bless Patty. She is a wonderful friend. So this morning's sermon is also brought to you by the seventh commandment. Anybody know what the seventh commandment is? Yeah, most of us have to look it up. It's fine. There's not a test. It is the commandment saying, thou shalt not commit adultery. And I know this is a great time for a real hellfire and brimstone sermon with pulpit pounding preaching and all of that. That's not the direction we're going this morning. But I do want to reflect on that commandment and how that kind of weasels its way into our life, whether it be secular or sacred, for good or for bad, and examine our ways of how we bring energy into the world based on some of these rules that we have to follow or are supposed to follow. And then what does that mean within the good news of Jesus Christ? Now, Patty said I can usually preach for about 45 minutes here. That's what you're used to. We're aiming for a lot less than that. And I do appreciate that your clock back there is in line with my watch. I was preaching at my home church in Cadillac, and I looked. Somebody had set the pastor's clock ahead by 5 minutes trying to get us out. So we're being honest with one another this morning. So I will go as fast as I can. Now, as I look out at this congregation, I'm just going to make an assumption, which we know what happens when you assume, but that maybe I'm not looking at a group of folks who would do a lot of social media in their spare time. Probably not on Instagram or on Facebook, maybe not Twitter or X as it's now known. And some of you may are or may be doing that, but something happened in the last 2 weeks on social media that like picked it up by storm, and it was showing up all over the place. My friends were posting jokes about it, and I see we have a giggle over here, so I know we're there. And so let me tell you what happened. There's this band called Coldplay, which I like to say is a modern band, which I kind of chuckle. I'm like, wow, that was like the young folks these days may say that's kind of a classic band, the way I made fun of the Eagles when I was a kid. I should ask for forgiveness for that now. But anyway, they were playing at this stadium. And when you go to a concert or a sporting arena, it's very common. They have a TV up in the sky, and they do this thing called Kiss Cam. And they zoom around and they'll find couples and you're supposed to give your partner a smooch and they'll, you know, it's like when you go to a wedding and you clink on the glass and it's supposed to be a good family fun cutesy time, right? Well, didn't go that way for one couple. The camera zoomed in on them and there was this man holding this woman in front. They look like they were having a great time until they realize they are on camera. And the look on their face was one of pure shock and then terror and horror, where he dove down beneath the seats and she turned and they froze. And there are many, many jokes circulating online about this couple. It's taken the world by storm in social media. But as I'm watching this unfold, I'm also finding myself becoming deeply uncomfortable with the situation. Some of the comments, so on Facebook, you can have these photos, you can have words, and there's comments underneath that people can put. Many, many of the comments were, I hope his wife takes him for everything. She's going to get half. Just really give it to him. Okay, that's typical for a divorce in our culture. But I think it also forgets that there is collateral damage in this. When these online or in-person lynch mobs show up, saying, we are going to fight for justice for this wrongdoing. And I suspect that some of the people preaching the loudest online were maybe people who had a run-in with adultery at some point in their life as well. I couldn't help but look at this couple as much as I was like, yeah, that might not have been the best decision that you all made. But what about your wife or your husband, your employers, your cousins, your siblings, your parents? Watching this unfold, your kids? And then everybody in the world sees that dirty laundry aired on TV, taken off by storm of people saying, by God, get them. And my heart started to hurt for them, the humiliation that they likely could have felt. Now, supposedly the gentleman, I don't know much about her, from what I'm hearing, this is gossip, so I can't gossip from the pulpit. That's a big problem. But it seems that the gist, and I haven't researched, is that maybe she worked for the same company that he worked for. He was a CEO, maybe a billionaire. Like, okay, they have their own things. I'm sure they have their own garbage. But my heart sank. And then I started going back to, I was raised in the United Methodist Church, a rather conservative United Methodist Church that has now gone to being a global Methodist church. And I remember our pastor giving a sermon, I was probably 10 or 11 at the time of Columbine, much like I think about Traverse City yesterday, this horrible event. And the shouts online of, give us the blood of the criminal who caused this. Thank God the killers are dead. And I started thinking about somewhere out there, there's likely a sibling or a parent or an aunt or an uncle. Now carrying this weight of grief, while also carrying the weight of shame, intrigue of why they did this. And is that fight for justice, is that bringing Christ into this world? And I'm not saying that people should get away with stuff. I'm going to be really clear. I've sat with those who have been affected by things like adultery and those who have committed adultery. Both parties are suffering at that point by the time they discuss with me for different reasons. And there's different actions that take place after that. So I'm not trying to give a free pass to anyone. But I couldn't help but think, what would Jesus do in this circumstance to somebody who did an absolutely terrible, horrible thing? Before being a minister, I was and still am a practicing registered nurse. And during that time, I also spent 12 years in the funeral industry. So as a funeral director, we picked up a 5-year-old that was killed on his bicycle by a drunk driver. Naturally, people are mad. They're angry. They're grieving. Our hearts ache. I also know that that driver will get their justice in the secular world. Is it my job to add to their pain? Is it my job to add to the pain of their parents who see the news articles? And trust me, there are those times where you really just want to say, yeah, we want to get even. I get that. But when we seek justice, are we looking at the long-term ramifications of who else might be harmed? And then what do our reactions say about us as followers of Christ? Is it just to get blood on our fingers and get even? Or is there something more going on there? And what happens when our reactions further harms innocent lives, like families down the line? So in this reading from John that we just read, I couldn't help but wonder about this woman. I envision her in this parable cowering, getting ready to be stoned. Talk about being bludgeoned to death, rock by rock. waiting for bones to break, face structures to cave in before you finally get that fatal blow to your head? Right out there in public. And Levitical law says they're supposed to do this. The law of the first testament, the adulteress shall be stoned. Wow. And Jesus stopped that. He freed us and freed those people from that action. I don't know how many of you have seen a human body riddled with trauma, but I have, and those are visions that never will leave my brain. Couldn't help but think about this woman. Was she a mother? Was she repentant? It's not in here. It just says a woman. But what was her humanity? She's not just an object in this story. This is a human being. What was the nature of her perceived adultery? Who was Jesus born to? A young, unwed woman, right, at that time when she was pregnant. This could have been Mary. Was it a matter of survival? I think about Bathsheba. What happens if Bathsheba would have told King David, kick rocks? No. She's labeled as an adulteress, but she was coerced and raped. But by the law, she was an adulteress. I have also seen second marriages that are 1,000 times healthier than a first marriage. Now, I'm not trying to say that to be a pastor saying I'm of this world. It's just the reality, and I suspect some of you have seen that as well. Unsafe, unfulfilling marriages, abusive marriages. And if that woman were to leave that in today's world and get remarried, she's an adulteress, right? But maybe that's part of the point here, too, is they didn't get down into the weeds of, okay, we got to dig in here to see what she's really guilty of. No, it's a broad statement. And what did Jesus say? Neither do I condemn you. Go your way. From now on, do not sin again. He didn't say, you prostitute, you loose woman. He said, go your way, and from now on, do not sin again. Wow, that's powerful stuff. And it's counterintuitive, because sometimes, yeah, we like the idea of karma. You get what you get, right? But that's not the point of the Gospels. That's not what we should be praying for and wanting to bring into this world. It is countercultural to not bring that energy into this world, in Jesus' time and in our time. I also like to believe that life is sticky and gray. Justice is complicated. It's not a black and white issue of legalism, fundamentalism when we read the Gospels. Jesus shows an alternative path that this world, when they want black and white, what is right, what is wrong, he offers this new fabric in a way to see things through the black and white. We have these sayings like, have you ever heard this one? Love the sinner, but hate the sin. What a toxic saying for a Christian to carry in their heart. And anywhere in this, do we have John saying, I love you, lady, but I hate what you did? No. Neither do I condemn you. Go forth and sin no more. We're all sinners. Every single one of us. We own that, just like this woman. He didn't lecture her. He didn't tell her he hated sin. It just wasn't even part of the conversation. It was love, forgiveness, and grace. Full stop. Now, some people say, wait. Okay, George. And progressive theological traditions, not progressive political, I want to be clear. Progressive theological traditions that look at the gospel through a different lens often get criticized of saying, but you're being of this world, George. Am I? Sure looks to me like being of this world is to stone thy neighbor. Regardless of what I've done wrong, give them hell. That's what we want to do to people. Make sure they get their piece of justice instead of trusting in Christ's redemption and their future for an afterlife and whatever God has for them there. the counterculture of Christ is to love them in spite of all this. And if we want to think a little bit more, the opposite of love, what is the opposite of love? They assured me they're getting pizza, so please nobody else follow them out. So the opposite of love, is it hate? Or sometimes is it just mere indifference? Well, thank God it's happening to them and not me. Thank God children are starving in other countries, but not here. Thank God that cheater got what was coming to him. Or is it merely just othering? We're the UCC Congregational Church. We're the best church in town. We're not going to talk to those Faith Baptist people down the road. We get into those conversations sometimes. And the truth is, Jesus loves us just as much as he loves them. That's uncomfortable. That's radical. Totally counterintuitive to anything biological urge in our body in the fight to survival. So, what is love then? We throw this word around all the time, right? It's always about lovey-dovey. That's what you want to be. Well, it's simple in how I define it. In my church, in seminary, I started this project, the Love Thy Neighbor campaign. So I had yard signs that said, love thy neighbor, no exceptions. In black or white, and we've been distributing them in Cadillac. We've been out 400 so far, which isn't bad for a small church of 78 people. And sometimes people ask me, well, what is love? My neighbor's a real expletive. We probably all know people like that who you really just want to think that person is a real schmuck. I'm a human being. I got a fancy little plastic collar, but I still have these feelings. And I like to reassure them, well, let's talk about godly love and how it is in the Gospels. So in 1 John chapter 4, we learn that God is defined as God is love. So we should love thy neighbor. What's that mean? Maybe give them a glimpse of God through our own reactions, our own behaviors, our own witness. There's a wonderful story of an Amish man that was asked, are you a Christian? And he said, I don't know. You'll have to ask my neighbor. Now, of course, that's an anecdote, but I think it's so powerful. Preaching through our lives and not just through our words. But we learn from Paul in 1 Corinthians that love is patient, kind. It's not envious. It's not boastful. It's not arrogant or rude. It's not irritable or resentful. And it doesn't rejoice in wrongdoing, but it rejoices in truth. That's love. Doesn't say you have to love that person by liking them and watching Jeopardy and, you know, sharing a lawn and a garden and property boundaries. But it tells you, okay, this is a reasonable way to love people, which to me was very freeing to be like, okay, it is kind of like that old saying that I necessarily don't like, but you're lucky I love you because I sure don't like you. Well, I'm not saying we shouldn't go around not liking people, but there is a workaround with love. It's a different thing. It's a different strategy, a different way of being. Yes, I'm 10, 15 minutes in. We're coming up close, y'all, so bear with me. We're not going for 45 minutes. So people do ask, so what? Again, they get away with it. I honestly ran this sermon by one of my friends whose partner did cheat on them, and that was the first thing that they said. And I said, no, that's not how I look at this. There is still accountability. And unless somebody is truly has a psychiatric disorder called narcissism, we know that suffering can change behavior. Guilt can change behavior. But I don't believe that people change behavior because they're told what a piece of junk they are. We don't learn that in Job when he lost everything. His friends did really great at first. They just sat with him, just showed some love. Job did nothing wrong, right? But then what started happening is their friends started giving suggestions. Well, maybe you did this wrong. Maybe you did that wrong. And think about that today. Well, maybe your partner wouldn't have cheated if you did this, that, or the other. We hear that sometimes. Talk about toxicity. But maybe sometimes we just need to sit with the suffering, acknowledge it's there, let them work it through. And that's advice from Rabbi Harold Kushner, a conservative Jewish author, author of When Bad Things Happen to Good People, a seminary standby and classic. But is it our job then to add to that suffering? Do we ever have the right, is that the possibility of what we're supposed to do, is add to the suffering of the other? I don't see Jesus telling us that. But But sometimes, boy, don't we want to? It just would feel good. I drove over, it used to be M42 between Manton and Mesick to get here, and there's hills. And I had a person one time pass me through there, and I was like, oh, I'd just love to see you get pulled over. And my prayers are answered. The next hill over, here comes a state trooper. Pull over, take off, I pull over, and when I went by, I was just like, you got him. But the truth is, were they headed up here to Munson Hospital to see a loved one? Was somebody in labor? Was there an emergency? Maybe they just had too much Diet Coke and really needed a bathroom. I don't know their story, but I know my reaction was one of, I like seeing that justice happening. Again, I am no better than anybody else or asking you to be better than myself. But did my reaction add any value into this world? As a foster dad and as an adoptive dad, we're trained in something called love and logic. And there was this great story in this love and logic thing. This foster dad went in the basement and he watched one of his two foster sons peeing on the couch. So I can, like, in my day, that would have been a come to Jesus moment right there, I tell you. But in foster land, we don't do that because we want to support people, right? These kids are there for a reason. We're not there to add to the trauma. So we're taught something called love and logic. And it's one of those like, oh, yeah. That's not good. That's a problem. Now the logic part is, how are you going to fix it? It's not about taking them out to the woodshed, taking your belt off. How are you going to fix it? How are you going to work through that? And then sitting with them as they process the next step. That's one strategy. So to me, this leaves us with a choice. When a world goes black, do we jump on that train of judgment? Or when the world wants to go white and just ignore all the sins and let people get away with things? Or do we lean on the countercultural Jesus into the gray? He wasn't just a hellfire and brimstone person or a lovey-dovey person. He could have tough words. We all see that. In fact, he did flip the tables at the temple. He fixed broken systems of oppression and didn't lose sight of the beloved community of God. So as we start to bring this sermon home, I want to go back to Galatians for a moment. So Paul was writing into Galatians. This was new church in Galatia. There were some new missionaries showing up, and they were preaching a new gospel. You should follow Christ, but the Gentiles, y'all still have to be circumcised. And Paul's like, no, they don't. This is a much more inclusive community than what you want them to be. Set aside your legal laws and let these people follow Jesus. And people were at each other's throats. We're congregationalists. We see that in committee work sometimes, right? Let's just be honest. We are wonderful people about working through conflict. That's what I love about the congregational tradition. But Paul was stepping in, and Paul's saying things like, well, if you sow for the Spirit, you will reap eternal life from the Spirit. And you should help your neighbors carry their burdens, and you should carry your own burden. Paul never says, hey, add to their burden. Take some stones off you and throw it on them. Because you got so much spiritual sowing going on, you need more room for that fruit. In the preceding story, the fruit of the Spirit was defined. And it was defined as patience, kindness, faithfulness, self-control. That's the burden we should be carrying, to provide those things even when it's a burden because our natural instinct is, give it to them. The fruits of the Spirit again. Patience, faithfulness, kindness, self-control. And if you sow to the Spirit, you will reap eternal life from the Spirit. That's our command through Paul, and that's what he's telling these churches in conflict. So it's another way of reaping what we sow and let other people reaping what they sow and not adding to their burden. So sometimes I lead these groups called meditation nights. I go to our alternative high school. I lead my Wednesday nights at our church. In meditation, we're taught just to recognize our feelings, not label them as good or bad. Maybe you have feelings of, I can't forgive right now. I'm mad as heck, and I'm not going to take it anymore. I'm depressed. I'm sad. I'm joyous. I'm happy. You sit there and pray in the silence, and you just recognize your feelings. And you may say, I'm mad. I know it sounds corny. It sounds cheesy, but it's a way of accepting your feeling. And you don't have to say, I'm mad, and that's a bad thing because I'm mad. I'm mad at this person. I'm a sinner. No, I'm mad at that person. and you just accept that feeling. And accepting that feeling that you're having or what they did wrong to you, that it happened, is the first step to trying to get to forgiveness. But sometimes as far as you can go is, I accept that that happened. Not that it's right or wrong. I accept that person did me wrong. That's one of those prayer techniques in this, if you're struggling. And yes, I'm to the word finally. Thank goodness for you, right? So Galatians ends with this. So then, whenever we have an opportunity, let us work for the good of all, and especially for those in the family of faith. Let us work for the good of all, but especially those of the family of faith. So yes, here at Benzonia First Congregational Church, you're a family of faith. You're working with each other, for each other, putting new carpet in your sanctuary to keep this a functional building for the next generation. What's happening outside of this church? What ecumenical partnerships do you have? How about your neighbors who are the non-believers or believing wrong? Are they part of the good of all? Is anybody othered in this great big family of God? So, as we are getting ready to move into a broken world that God loved so much, John 3:16, right? Love so much that he gave his only begotten son. We're going forth into this world, but in this world of us versus them, a country broken in red versus blue, of rural versus urban, even faith versus faith. And unfortunately, beloved child of God versus beloved child of God. What is your call leaving here today? I can't answer that for you. That's for you to reflect on. How do you bring that love of Jesus into the world? Are you sowing seeds of the Spirit or adding to the culture of hate and derogatory loving? Do we dare to walk with Jesus' teachings in our heart and in our actions, even in the world that says, crucify them? And crucify them. The freedom of the choice of what you sow is yours. I pray that together we support one another in sowing the peace of Christ into this world. So if we can please take a few moments of just silent prayer and meditation before our next hymn. Bless you. Somebody sneezed at my ordination. I said, bless you. And I'm like, I think that means more now. I don't know. So with that, let us come back together and stand as you're able. We have hymn. It's in red E. So, right at the beginning. There you go. Good spot for Amazing Grace. So thank you. So hymn, red E, Amazing Grace. Thank you.